Part of our Star Wars celebration today, music from The Force Awakens and Rogue One. May the 4th be with you. And I know someone who the Force is with in strong, well, force, and that would be Jacob Banks, who's joining me in studio.
That's right. Here we are. It's Music 101. What are the chances? What are the chances it fall on? Although I know this day is Cinco de Cuatro.
Oh, sure. Which is,
if you're a fan of Arrested Development, yeah. That's the beginning of the final season of Arrested Development is. But I won't get into it. It's not worth it. But it's so anyway. Here we are. It's I mean, it feels like the end of the season of Music 101. I mean, we continue in the summer, though we usually take June off, and we'll have to talk about that, Mindy.
Your
I need
schedules
some, I know. Here. Well, seriously, I mean, this 30 minutes a month is really taking its toll, so I need some time to pause and reflect. So anyway,
and come back strong in the
right, exactly. We'll be strong. Yeah, we'll come back strong. No, we'll be back definitely in July, and maybe we'll do June too. I don't know, but I love Music 101. I love coming over to talk with you, and it is a beautiful day out there.
Oh yeah, after so many
dreary,
yep, kind of gray days, it just kind of lifts everybody's spirits, even if there's other things going on that might not be so uplifting.
Right.
At least the day is beautiful. The weather's great. And we're going to be talking about your Occidental Symphony, which I had just a few minutes to tell you quickly, because, of course, we always do catch up when you come in here.
Right.
This was one of those Music 101s, and I mean last April, you know, this April, a month ago,
yes,
when you and I were talking about St. Matthew Passion. And we started referencing your Occidental Symphony, which is going to be the topic of today's Music 101. And you gave a great little synopsis of the piece, the inspiration, who commissioned it, and blah, blah, blah. And it was just a nice, beautifully done little capsulated
self-promotion.
You know,
well, well, you know how I hate to talk about myself.
I know. Well, I had to twist your arm for this
one.
A little.
What can I say? The hours I put in, someone must be forced to hear about it. That's why I teach, right?
That's right.
No, it is not.
Well, but you know, I mean, this is a big deal. And it was so fascinating because of all of the emails and comments that we get from listeners, that one has inspired the most commentary
to
date.
Yeah. Fantastic.
I had emails and calls from people that may have only heard part of some of that, and they were wondering,
it's like,
a symphony? Yeah. Well, I heard Vachel Lindsay.
Guy
in
smiling.
Yeah.
So we found a Vachel Lindsay fan, mm-hmm, which is great. I'm so happy to hear that because Vachel Lindsay is highly underrated, in my, mm-hmm, opinion. Carl Sandburg takes all the air out of the room, takes up all the bandwidth for Illinois poets, and if there's anything left, it goes to Edgar Lee Masters.
Right.
But in fact, I find certain of Vachel, I mean, you know, not every poem is of equal merit, obviously, but certain ones, including Brian, but also he's well known for, there's a one that he wrote at the outbreak of World War I called Abraham Lincoln Walks at Midnight, which is a poem basically Lincoln's walking around Springfield lamenting the fact that wars continue after the Civil War. But there is a poem that's simply called Lincoln by Vachel Lindsay. And it's short enough, I'm going to read it to you. It is, and this is because we've had a big Lincoln kick. We've been on a big Lincoln kick at my house. My kids are, we went down to the museum, because we went down to the Vachel Lindsay home, and then while we were there, which is like 2 blocks from Abe Lincoln's house, and in fact, his home was owned by a Todd sister, so that house was, Lincoln had been there many times, but he says, this is what Lindsay says in his poem, "Would I might rouse the Lincoln in you all, that which is tendered in the wilderness, in lonely prairies and God's tenderness. Imperial soul, star of a weedy stream, born where the buffaloes still dream, whose spirit hoofbeats still storm above that grave, above that heart of earth and prairie fire, fire that freed the slave." Vachel Lindsay is
powerful.
Underrated. I think,
yeah.
So. I was so happy to hear that there were people around here. I mean, maybe we need a branch of the Vachel Lindsay Society in the Quad Cities because, and again, I love Sandburg and Masters as far as your 20th century Illinois poets. But I don't know. Something about the poem Brian really struck me. In fact, it struck me a long time ago in high school. I took it to the to the state speech meet. That was where I first learned of the poem, and you know, here many years later, revisited it. And so it seemed like my first plan with the Marine Band was to write a concerto for band, similar to Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra, where everyone would be featured, because the fact is, it's a band of virtuosi. They're mm-hmm. all amazing. And so I figured, well, now would be a good chance to sort of write. I thought about writing five movements like Bartok wrote and sort of having, you know, big arch forms. But the more I got into it, the more I thought, you know, I can write anything I want for them of any duration. I should write a symphony. This is, if I'm ever going to have a chance to write a symphony, now is my chance. It's for wind ensemble, which is fine. They're such a fine wind ensemble. And I was determined also to make it not a pre-transcription, meaning a piece that I really wish I would have had strings for. No, I wanted it to be a piece that was truly for band mm-hmm. and yet truly a symphony. World events shaped up last year and elections were on everyone's mind, I returned to this poem, Brian, which is autobiographical. Lindsay was 16 years old in Springfield when Brian came through. William Jennings Bryan, who went up against William McKinley in 1896.
In 1896 yeah. elections, which Absolutely. Was also an extremely contentious
oh, gosh.
Election year.
Well, you've heard, I don't know if you know this, but these things can be very contentious. yeah. So 1896 was just a mind blower. I mean, think about this. This is what I explained to people. If you want to know how crazy it was, imagine if in 2012, the Democratic Party had gotten together and had written a platform that intentionally omitted Barack Obama, a sitting president who could run for re-election. I mean, the Free Silver movement, which completely and totally overtook the Democratic Party in that year, was just like this crazy groundswell, and it was so central and crucial to people, and completely caught fire, such that Grover Cleveland was excluded from mm-hmm. the convention. So it was so contentious and a fascinating election. But what I love about the election was the entire issue of free silver, which we don't have time to get into
no,
for now,
no,
do we? There's some music
we'll
there's
the
around
music.
Here somewhere, right?
But Lindsay was a supporter of William Jennings Bryan.
Absolutely.
He totally was on board with where Brian's feelings were about all of this.
Right. And in fact, this brings
and
us...
he saw him,
for
fact,
sure. Yeah, he did.
Through.
He saw him in Springfield. And Lindsay also grew up, I mean, I took my kids and my wife, we all went down to the Vachel Lindsay home. You can look outside his bedroom and see the Illinois governor's mansion where John Peter Altgeld was governor at the time, who was sort of a great progressive hero. There's so much to talk about, but let's talk about 1896, because yeah. yeah. my hope for this Music 101 is actually to drive people who are curious to go look at YouTube. There's a great video of the concert.
Yes,
the four
is.
Movement, it's all broken down. You get to see the Marine Band sort of in their full uniform. They're phenomenal musicians. So I thought I'd give a little taste of each movement, and then people can, if they'd like to hear more, go check out the playlist on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. What I really liked about this, I listened to the whole thing yesterday, is you really, each of these movements, I mean, it all goes together, but each of them is kind of a standalone. You weren't really trying for a great symphonic narrative
no.
here at all.
No.
This was not really programmatic in that sense.
Absolutely. It's hard to explain the difference,
yes.
right?
Yep.
Because,
yep.
And I said in my program notes, this is a symphony, not a symphonic poem. I have no problem with narratives. I love storytelling. There's a sort of an aversion among some composers to telling stories as if that's some kind of crutch. That's not how I feel. But it was like I felt like Lindsay took his own experiences in the 1896 election and turned them into something bigger and more abstract, because it wasn't just about free silver. It was about East versus West, and it was about insiders and outsiders. And it was about, you know, he says at the end of the poem, this was the defeat of my boyhood, the defeat of my dream. So for him, it was like, I mean, it was about bigger things, and sort of he rearranged events. And so I saw no problem with rearranging events. So let's talk about the first
yeah.
movement, because this one touches really directly, and you wouldn't know this unless I told you. So there's this thing opens with, there are two elements. And in fact, why don't we just play the beginning of the first movement? But listeners, see if you can hear there's two different groups. I've made partisans of the marine band. So there's two different groups of instruments, and they have very different sound. And I want to see if listeners maybe can hear the difference. So here's the very beginning of the first movement of Occidental Symphony. So maybe you heard it, maybe you didn't. There are two groups. One is sort of the pinging, high, you know, silvery, that's the wrong word.
Sound of
it's
silver.
Sort of gold. Actually, it's, it should be golden. It's this glistening sort of very high and kind of, you know, exalted sound. And then there's the euphoniums, the tubas, the bassoons, the clarinets, all on this sort of low, steady chord. Well, the battle of 1896 was gold versus silver. Gold was, you know, for in Lindsay's mind, were the plutocrats out east with dollar signs upon their coats. And the sort of free, unrestrained, unrefined West that wanted free and unlimited coinage of silver. So I've set up at this very beginning this dichotomy. And in fact, there's a chord. So I have what I call the gold chord and what I call the silver chord. And in fact, this whole opening section, they're sort of like living in separate worlds. Ultimately, as the first movement progresses, that silver chord takes over. Because the title of the first movement is Blue Border of the West, which is basically, it's sort of this Mississippi panorama, which we all know so well around here, but I thought it would be fun to take it to the nation's capital. And it sort of, the whole idea was that the West, the Mississippi itself, represented this sort of new possibility. Poor farmers, miners, people who, you know, the term, the phrases, and my daughter loves to recite this line, prairie schooner children born beneath the stars with no physician there except a Kansas prayer. The whole first movement is silver, basically, sort of what kind of ground on which did we have silver? And then at the end of the first movement, gold comes back. And they're no longer sort of peacefully coexisting.
Oh, not at all.
Right. Gold, yeah. Gold starts to sort of, you know, gold returns, and then silver, you know, having seen this, there's a very, it's the first movement is very expansive, very much inspired by the first movement of Scheherazade, actually, of Rimsky-Korsakov. It's got this big sort of rolling, expansive sound. And silver, you know, having sort of shown its beauty, is no longer ready to play nice with the East. And so at the end of the first movement, there's this sort of battle that starts to break out between this gold and silver chords. They come back and it's like, bad news. And the entire second movement, which is called Nebraska's Cry Went Eastward, was basically this entire movement that was fomenting in the West toward free and unlimited coinage of silver. It really wasn't just about currency. It was about who is the economy for? What is a businessman was what Brian asked at his famous Cross of Gold speech. They say, well, you think a businessman is somebody who sits in an office and handles money. He says, I think a shop owner is a businessman. I think a farmer is a businessman. Like, basically, who is the economy for? And the silver standard became this, you know, cry that went eastward. Nebraska's cry, because, of course, you know, as a native Nebraskan, you know who is an Omaha native? William Jennings Bryan. Absolutely. Yep. So let's listen to the beginning of this scherzo movement, the second movement, Nebraska's Cry Went Eastward. We'll hear there's a huge E-flat clarinet solo. Michelle Erznikak, who's an amazing E-flat clarinet player, the principal E-flat clarinet, can you believe that, in the Marine Band, has this big solo, which it's just supposed to sound scrappy and Western and unrespectful, but vigorous and ready for a fight. Here's the second movement, Nebraska's Cry Went Eastward.
I love that, the clarinet demanding to be heard.
Right. There's no...
You will hear me.
Well, and the second movement is a series of these solos. The E-flat clarinet has one, and then there's sort of a tenor sax bass trombone duo, and then the trumpets have their thing. And then the whole second half of it is a repeat of the first half, but this time she's bringing her friends. So it rather than being an E-flat clarinet solo, it's this... Because they have a million clarinets in the Marine Band. It's this right. crazy clarinet thing. So it's just this big, massive... riot, and you can imagine for gold how terrifying that was for Nebraska's cry to go eastward and think. I mean, if you just learn about the machinations of the McKinley campaign and how they managed to adjust their messaging and not imagining they needed to, McKinley wanted to fight the election over tariffs because that was his strong suit. But this currency question came up in a big way. So that I sort of jump for the third movement. I jump out of the narrative. So the things, again, I'm not following a story so much. The third movement is called Gone to Join the Shadows. And this has become a phrase that we've adopted around my house where it basically means, and it's a sort of a poignant phrase, but I'm amazed when my kids, even my four-year-old will come up and say this. My six-year-old, when the Christmas tree was sitting on the... curb, and it looked so sad. And I said, he's like, oh, there's the Christmas tree. He's like, gone to join the shadows. And there's this beautiful, if you read nothing else in the Brian poem, read the last section where Lindsay basically goes through all the big power players in the 1896 election, and he says, where are they now? This is, 30-some years later, 20-some years later. And he says, where are they now? And they've all gone to join the shadows. And there are those that he deeply respects, including Brian and John Peter Altgeld. And he says, when he talks about Altgeld gone to join the ironies with old John Brown, whose fame rings loud for 1,000 years. It's amazing, actually. He doesn't mention Lincoln at all in this poem because he was such, he was so close to Lincoln, ardent Lincoln supporter. Too, knew his neighborhood. He lived in Lincoln's neighborhood. But in any case, gone to join the shadows. And we'll just play the beginning of this movement. There are a bunch of different elements, but basically one of the fun things about the beginning is it starts with this flute trio that keeps coming back. And playing principal flute happens to be Elizabeth Plunk, formerly Elizabeth McCafferty, who grew up across the street from my current home in Moline. And I didn't know this until I visited the Marine Band for my last premiere with them. And she said, we've sort of played, oh, you're from Quad Cities, where? And we zeroed in on, and her mother is organist, and organist, I think it, I don't want to say which church in Moline because I'll be wrong, but she's a local musician, and so Elizabeth, many people around here know Elizabeth. So you'll hear this beautiful flute trio and know that that very top of it is a local girl done good. Yeah. And then that flute trio is contrasted with this brass chorale, which sort of marinates for the whole movement and then blossoms fully near the very end of the movement. But this is the beginning of Gone to Join the Shadows.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally love that. As a former flute player, I can tell you, getting to hear the flute sort of shine at the opening of a movement is awesome. But it also, I think, really highlights this sort of reflective quality that this movement brings to it with Gone to the Shadows. Where have they all gone?
Right.
You know, there's this sweet, almost lyrical flute trio kind of providing that whiff of nostalgia or reminiscing.
Yeah. And at the end of the movement, there's a just, and it wouldn't be, I won't call it a surprise, but there's a, the flutes continue and then they find themselves at a loss.
Yeah.
And you'll hear why, because it ended up in the contrabass clarinet and bass clarinet have an answer, and I don't think it's what the flutes want to hear.
Yeah.
And,
that's
and
so, true.
That was such a pleasure. That movement was the one we workshopped the most because it was so delicate and everything had, we cut a portion out and we changed the chord here. I mean, it was great to have that opportunity. We have only a few minutes left, so I want to get to the last movement because I think this would be the one that would perhaps be the most entertaining, if nothing else. I sort of jump back into the narrative of the 1896 election and try to describe in a way, musically, the kind of atmosphere surrounding a political speech in Springfield in 1896. And in fact, we'll just play the beginning of it. The whole thing, most of it, are these 16 or 32 bar phrases that are repeated. And every repeat has something added when you repeat. So you hear the same thing over and over, but it's sort of swirling, and eventually this sort of Sousa-style march emerges. We don't have time to get that far into the piece now. We'll sort of get close. But the march slowly emerges, and then there's a big trombone solo. And people will be interested to know that the trombonist, actually in his part, I put under his notes words from William Jennings Bryan's Cross of Gold speech. So he's actually playing, but he's singing. He's actually singing these words from the Cross of Gold speech. So, and the principal trombone just does a phenomenal job playing this. But let's listen maybe to the beginning of the movement is called And the Bands Played Strange and Stranger Music. So yeah, the madness continues, and ultimately
everyone jumping into the fray,
right.
Sort of and making sure their voice is heard in all
right.
of this. Awesome, I love this.
And there's a turning point after this, and this is where I sort of because Lindsay's own life ended very tumultuously in the midst of the Great Depression, very very tragically,
very sad.
Yes, very very sad. I couldn't leave that out because I feel like the enveloping chaos that was the 1896 election in many ways never left him. And the fact that he himself has gone to join the shadows, there's a turning point where the Sousa March and the political rally give way to something much more tragic. I don't know if the ending is tragic or exultant or not. It certainly is not ironic, and I didn't want it to. I was worried with all the Sousa March stuff that it would get kind of corny or that it would be like a joke, and I was surprised to find, I don't know what you thought as a listener, that there's not really parody. It doesn't seem like parody.
No, or even pastiche or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's very much, and again, given the fact that there is also some history tied in with Sousa in 1896
with
this symphony, I thought that it was great to kind of give that nod to that.
Well, it's a funny thing because when I wrote my first piece for them, I had this approach, which was, okay, best musicians in the country, let's write the hardest thing. Like, if I'm ever going to write something really hard, it's going to be now. And so the piece I wrote for them, The Information Age, yeah. it was tough. And yeah. it was fun. I mean, and the Augie Symphonic Band, Augustana Symphonic Band, played it beautifully. And so, you know, it was a challenge to which many people rose. But I'm like, you know what? To do it again, I'm like, I have to. Okay, so we know that they've got chops. We know they're the best. But what is their native language? And they, I mean, John Philip Sousa ran this band. He wrote many of his marches for this band. They play it constantly. I mean, and it is true civic music. So I thought, you know, why don't I write my own Sousa march, do it in the context of this movement right. that is about a political rally, and then, and sort of see what happens. And it was so fun. And then again, so we heard a bit of the movement. The whole thing is in march time. The whole thing's in march time. It just sort of like slowly kind of emerges, you know, that, oh, this is actually
it's
a march.
Yeah.
And they played the portions that were intended to be, you know, almost copies of what Sousa, you know, I wanted people to wonder, did Sousa write that or not? It was sort of a challenge I set to myself. And so you can tell me whether, you know, people can email and say, it was a poor imitation. I had a guy come up to me at the concert and said, I do not approve.
Seriously?
he was very complimentary, but he was making fun of me for, you know, he said, may John Philip Sousa haunt you.
Wasn't what I was going for,
right.
but okay.
Well, whatever, you know, that's you never know how reactions will go. So.
Well, we heard the President's Own United States Marine Band featured in this performance because they gave the world premiere
yes.
of your work, the Occidental Symphony, and this has been the subject of today's Music 101, and absolutely fascinating. So anyone that wants to learn more about Vachel Lindsay, go to it, because
yeah.
there's a lot of great stuff here. Jacob, thanks again.
Thank you.
I can't believe how fast our time flies.
I know. Too much
fun.
Yep.
Till next month.